Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport. Offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Senate effectively kills the dreams of legislative leaders after watering down a controversial charter school bill.
I ask you right now, are not these charter schools public schools also?
Also tonight, the House is getting closer and closer to revamping Florida's child welfare system.
The Miami Herald article has been extremely troubling, and I think we're all going to continue to examine it, this issue, and see what we can do. But I think this is a great start.
We'll also delve into the possibility of more spending for Florida's homeless, better health coverage for immigrant kids, and the attack of the superbugs. We're in week four of the 2014 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Another school choice bill looks to be in trouble in the Florida legislature. Lynn Hatter reports the Senate Education Committee has watered down a proposal that would have established a statewide contract for charter schools.
Senate Education Committee Chairman John Legge tried to set the pace of his Education Committee early on with this warning. Keep it short.
Members, just so you're aware today in the audience, we have 19 bills and 5 executive appointments on the agenda today. So we are going to move very quickly.
And at first, lawmakers did just that, flying through the first few bills so quickly that at one point, Tallahassee Democratic Senator Bill Monford actually got ahead of himself, opposing the wrong bill.
But on the other hand, I know what this means, and that is that's one less elective. And that elective has got
Senator Monford, just so you're aware, we're on Senate Bill 290, which is the Poet Laureate Bill. That's the financial literacy.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
I was so anxious to get on your side.
The Senate Education Committee approved the creation of a state poet laureate and called for public schools to teach financial literacy. It even skipped a bill by Inverness Republican Senator Charlie Dean, who was missing from the room when his bill came up, only to go back to it later on. Still, the pace could not last. The committee began running into headwinds over a bill by Jacksonville Republican Senator Aaron Bean, giving outside groups like the YMCA access to public school facilities, such as tracks and gyms. That doesn't sit well with some schools, says Panhandle Area Education Consortium lawyer Bob Harris, who was speaking on behalf of small rural districts. Harris says school district leaders are afraid if someone is hurt on their equipment, they'll face legal action, even if schools themselves won't.
We have very great concerns about this bill, specifically even as amended. The reason is this. Even though it provides that these agreements will have indemnification, all that means for me as a lawyer defending school districts is there's now two defendants instead of one. The school districts will still get sued.
Also consuming some of the committee's time was a complete rewrite of a controversial bill that would have created a statewide standardized charter school contract. A House version of the bill gained approval in that chamber's Education Appropriations Committee Monday, but Legge introduced a complete rewrite of the Senate version of the bill, deleting the standardization language along with other provisions that would have given charter schools access to unused public school buildings, a provision public schools have fought against for years. As it's been rewritten, the Senate bill would send disputes between charter schools and their districts to an administrative law judge. League of Women Voters lobbyist Debbie Harrison-Rumberger says her group likes the changes Legge has made in the bill.
Been that the Florida League supports expanded public school parental choice under controlled conditions determined by each school district.
The dismantling of the charter school bill marks a second blow to legislative leaders who had championed expanding the state school choice programs. Last week, Bradenton Republican Senator Bill Galvano effectively killed an attempt to expand the state's corporate tax scholarship program, often referred to as the school voucher system, when he pulled his own bill aiming to do just that from consideration. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
A bill aimed at making sure more kids don't die from abuse or neglect under the care of the state's foster care system is now advancing in the House. As Sasha Cordner reports, the latest plan to revamp the Florida Department of Children and Families builds on a recent investigative series by the Miami Herald.
A series of Miami Herald articles last year looking at a spate of child deaths prompted the Florida legislature to look into overhauling the state's child welfare system. More recently, the newspaper published an investigative series called Innocence Lost that took a closer look at more than 400 deaths that happened under DCF's watch. And Stewart Republican Representative Gail Harrell says something has to be done. As the House Healthy Family Subcommittee Chair, she's leading her chamber's search for solutions.
And we're also looking further at child safety issues. And given what has been highlighted in the Miami Herald articles, we're reviewing to make sure that our bill really is going to be effective in addressing these issues.
Her bill, very similar to the Senate's, rolls three proposals into one large House bill. Like its Senate companions, it allows for the Assistant DCF Secretary to take charge of other areas so it doesn't all fall on the DCF Chief's shoulders. It also places emphasis on the qualifications newly hired child protective investigators must have to do their job. That includes a degree in social work or a human services-related field. It also creates a new institute that will report back to the legislature on the effectiveness of the new training and education requirements. And Harrell says other provisions are devoted to transparency efforts.
In the long run, transparency is what's going to improve the system. We want to make sure that all child deaths that come through our hotline that are a result of abuse are reported appropriately and that we know who they are. You know who they are. So the public is watching. And so that website's going to be extremely important. We're also making sure the public knows how we evaluate CBCs and that that's on a website.
The CBCs, or the community-based care organizations that work with DCF, will also have to put their budgets online. And per a Reuters probe, it hopes to take care of the issue of private rehoming. Those are the cases in which adoptive parents who no longer wish to care for a child use online groups to find a new home for the kid. It also makes sure that siblings stay together and if they can't, have every opportunity to communicate with one another. A huge priority for Thomas Fair, who represents foster care advocacy group 40 Youth Shine. As a former foster kid, he says he knows firsthand what it feels like to be separated from a sibling, his own twin brother.
You know, there wasn't a lot of people I could always depend on, but I knew for a fact I could always depend on him. And when we separated, we only spoke probably about 5 times on the phone and never seen each other throughout the whole entire time. And then a lot of times I didn't know exactly where he was because he was going all around the United States. And, you know, when he was here, when I finally got reunited, I was one of the greatest, happiest days of my life. The off part of that was that even though it was one of the happiest days of my life, I can honestly say that we were never ever the same.
Fair says he'd also like the panel to consider allowing foster youth to keep in contact when foster siblings live in separate foster homes.
I can't tell you how many times that when a young man moves away, I wanted to try to stay in contact with him, like, hey, what's his information? Can I get in contact? And they can't tell me because it's confidentiality violations. And how can that happen whenever, you know, for some people don't have no brothers or sisters whatsoever, and I'm the only person in their life? Can that type of thing happen?
Others, like Stephen Murphy, who serves on the Child Protection Transformation Advisory Board, say while he likes the direction the bill is heading, he wants the panel to consider reform that's done very well in Illinois, which once had a troubled child welfare system like Florida.
The major turning point for Illinois was the fact that they were the first public child welfare agency in the United States of America to become credentialed and certified by an outside body. So I think you may want to take a look at the fact that we need to have or explore the idea of utilizing an outside body such as COA or another body like that to look to credential our own DCF.
The 119-page bill also has the support of many members on the panel, including West Park Democratic Representative Chevron Jones.
I know Brian Pitt says it all the time that when the bill is long, there must be something wrong, but I beg to differ on this one here. I think that we've actually put together a good product.
Still, Esther Republican Representative Ray Rodriguez says he wishes lawmakers on the panel had more time to work on the proposal a bit more.
I think this is an excellent start. I wish we had another week to continue working on it, but I recognize this is our last meeting, and for that, I will be supporting the bill because this is a good bill, and I know we'll continue to work on it as it goes through the process, and if it doesn't do what we intend for it to do, we'll be back next year. Lord willing, and we'll continue this work.
The House Healthy Family Subcommittee unanimously agreed to advance the proposal and make it into a committee bill. Meanwhile, a series of reforms similar to the House's proposal recently passed a first Senate panel. But after the Miami Herald's investigative series, Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel, who chairs the Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee, says she's going to rewrite those reforms. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
A Florida House panel talked about the possibility of allowing online voter registration in the state today. Although no vote was taken by the Ethics and Election Subcommittee, lawmakers did hear from the State Association of Supervisors of Elections, the League of Women Voters, and other voting access groups. Under current law, handwritten signatures must be sent to election supervisors in order to register. Supporters of online registration say it'll be easier for most citizens and more people will be able to vote. The bill hasn't gotten a committee vote, but its sponsor, Tallahassee Democratic Representative Alan Williams, says today's discussion is a good start. Critics of online registration say it could create fraud and dilute the impact of legitimate ballots. Still to come on Capitol Report, a bill moving in the House aims to address the emerging threat of treatment-resistant bacteria after its sponsor watched a PBS documentary.
I don't have options based on medical science. I've run out of options. I don't see a way out of this.
More spending to help the homeless didn't make it through last year's session. Will this year see a different outcome?
Florida's number 3 in the country for the homeless population.
And amidst all the controversy over health care, Florida's immigrant kids have a long wait before they can even qualify for certain kinds of health insurance.
If the problem returns, it's going to reach an acute level again before the child has to come back to the emergency room.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
As the Florida House prepares to begin budget negotiations, two lawmakers have banded together to talk up the need for more money to combat homelessness in that budget. As Stan Jastrzebski reports, it's the continuation of an effort that appeared to pass last year, only to meet with the governor's veto pen.
At the end of last year's session, Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Latvala had gotten at least some of the homelessness fighting funding he desired. But the senator's high was short-lived, as Governor Rick Scott stripped some of those provisions from the final document. Latvala says it became clear to him what was happening.
The ability to get in the budget was based on who the legislator was as opposed to some sort of criteria. And I'm very hopeful that this would help us direct money to where it's needed and have a criteria for determining where it's needed the most.
On Tuesday, Latvala and South Pasadena Republican Representative Kathleen Peters staged a full court press on behalf of homelessness funding, simultaneously taking the podium in committees in both the House and Senate. Peters says the bills spend state money on challenge grants that homelessness prevention groups would compete for, and she says it's clear which proposals would receive favorable treatment.
We are only looking for programs that will have wraparound services to ensure that it is not just going into one thing, but we'll be talking about all comprehensive wraparound services as well.
What she means is that any money awarded by the state couldn't simply be used to pay for more beds and food for the homeless. Latvala says it must instead be used to help people treat the many factors that led to their current conditions.
To not only shelter the homeless, but provide mental health services, job training, and so forth.
Tuesday's committee hearings are part of a larger conversation trying to establish best practices for how to shrink the state's homeless population. But one factor everyone agrees on is that not enough money has been spent in the past on solving the problem. And local governments have begun to aggressively lobby the legislature for more stable funding sources. Palm Beach County, for instance, has stationed its legislative affairs director, Todd Bonlaren, at the Capitol to lobby for bills like Latvala's.
Our Board of County Commissioners has asked us to make that a priority up here, both in looking at different tools from the perspective of how do we ask the state to put a little more skin in the game and create a dedicated funding source for homelessness, and then how do we look locally to see if there's some other options that might be available.
Peters told the House Economic Development and Tourism Subcommittee the Sunshine State has the third most homeless people of any state. But the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development shows the statistics for chronically homeless people are even more dire. In a 2013 report to Congress, HUD estimated that only California has more people without roofs consistently over their heads. HUD's numbers guess that Florida even has 50% more chronically homeless people than New York and Texas, which rank third and fourth nationally. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
A visit to the doctor can help a sick child feel better, and if that child is insured, then it can help the parent feel better too. But in Florida, children who were born outside of the United States and live here lawfully must wait until they've been in the country for 5 years to qualify for a type of subsidized health insurance. As Julia Duba from member station WLRN in Miami reports, a bill that would drop this waiting period got its first hearing in a Florida Senate committee today.
Severiana Novas Francois moved to Sanford, Florida from the Dominican Republic 3 years ago. She brought her kids, and she says she's thankful for a lot of things the United States has to offer. But when she tried to sign up her three daughters for the subsidized health care program, known as Florida Kid Care, she was denied.
I can't believe it. Even in my country, there's no many opportunities to people. The life is hard there, but at least you can have health care. At least that.
That's because even lawful residents in Florida must wait until they have lived here for 5 years to apply for Florida Kid Care. And so for 3 years, Severiana has been in and out of the emergency room with her three daughters. The reasons? Bicycle accidents, allergic reactions, and a flu.
Okay, take it to the emergency room, but what later? No, don't pay the bills? No.
And also, when you go to the emergency room, at times you are sent home without any follow-up care. So if the problem returns, it's going to reach an acute level again before the child has to come back to the emergency room.
Diana Ragbeer is the director of public policy for the Children's Trust, a children's advocacy group that is supporting the bill. She also says caring for children in the emergency room doesn't just cost the parent a lot of money, it also costs the state if no one else pays the bill. This waiting period used to be a federal requirement. Ragbeer says it later became clear that when it comes to health care, it's cheaper for states to pay for preventative care than it is to treat illnesses. And in 2009, the government gave states the option to cover legally residing immigrant children immediately without the 5-year waiting period.
And if the federal government says that our state can cover them, I think we should be covering them.
That's Republican Representative Jose Felix Diaz from Miami. He and Senator Rene Garcia of Hialeah are sponsoring the legislation. Since 2009, 26 states have dropped the waiting period. Last year, the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration estimated that dropping the waiting period would cost the state $500 million. That was because some broad language in last year's bill suggested it would set out to cover undocumented immigrants as well. Ragbeer of the Children's Trust says this year's bill is clear about who would be covered.
So that adds comfort to some members of the legislature who are concerned about that.
The state would have to pay nearly $20 million, and about $49 million would come from matching federal funds. Diaz says now the bill looks like it has a better chance at passing.
I am optimistic. I do think that we have a better than average chance of passing this legislation and helping these kids this year.
Severiana even made the four-hour trip to Tallahassee and urged lawmakers to pass the bill. But in the meantime, she hopes her children stay healthy.
You keep it with a finger crossed all the time so your kids don't get sick. It's hard.
She's even considering taking them to get a checkup with doctors in the Dominican Republic when she visits this summer. I'm Julia Duba in Miami.
Hundreds of Floridians who are deaf or hard of hearing and their family members, interpreters, and advocates rallied at the Florida Capitol today. They were supporting legislation that would require licensing of sign language interpreters and restoration of funding for the council that coordinates the state's policies for deaf Floridians. The advocates also highlighted the case of Felix Garcia, a deaf man who has served 32 years so far for a crime the group say he did not commit. They urged the governor and cabinet to free him through the clemency process. Advocates say Garcia's deafness and inability to understand what he was being asked at his trial played a big role in his conviction. The advocates, representing several groups that assist deaf Floridians, said the failure to accommodate those folks' communications needs has severe and tragic consequences, including the failure of children to get a proper education, succeed in school, and reach their potential, along with the probability that deaf adults will be unemployed or underemployed and unable to support themselves and their families. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Ronald J. Eben has a preview of major bill action expected Wednesday at the Capitol.
The Florida House goes into session at 9 Wednesday morning. Some of the bills on the agenda include the single-gender public school bill that calls for the establishment of one single-gender school in each school district. There's the Student Eligibility for Extracurricular Activities Bill. It authorizes students attending certain public schools to participate in extracurricular activities at another public schools. The Senate goes into session at 9:30. Senators will take up a bill requiring the driver of a vehicle involved in a crash that results in serious bodily injury to immediately stop the vehicle and remain at the scene of the crash or face various penalties, including a 3-year loss of license. There is a bill that limits the liability of public schools with respect to canned or perishable food donated to charitable or nonprofit organizations. Also up for debate, the Florida Civil Rights Act. That prohibits discrimination on the basis of pregnancy in public lodging and food service establishments and in employment. The commercial parasailing bill is also on the agenda. It requires the operator of a vessel engaged in commercial parasailing be required to obtain and maintain an insurance policy, have a current and valid license issued by the U.S. Coast Guard, and prohibit commercial parasailing unless certain equipment is present in the vessel and certain weather conditions are met. Those are some of the bills on the legislative agenda for Wednesday, March 26th. I'm Ronald J. Evan.
Finally this evening, a bill moving through the Florida House would create a new website keeping track of treatment-resistant bacterial infections. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the bill aims to fight such infections by fostering new research into so-called superbugs.
tonight.
We are seeing now the emergence globally of some forms of bacteria that are effectively untreatable.
PBS viewers might recall the Frontline episode called Hunting the Nightmare Bacteria.
He had some bugs that they had never seen before.
Frontline investigates how we got here.
We immediately went on high alert, the equivalent of DEFCON 5.
No matter what we did, the bacteria was still spreading.
Frontline examined the rise in the number of bacterial infections that are resistant to all known treatments. They can kill otherwise healthy people and can be spread through contact with everyday settings like playgrounds. In January, 3 months after the documentary aired, Fernandina Beach Republican Representative Janet Adkins credited it for inspiring her to file an infection control bill. She introduced the measure this week in the House Health Quality Subcommittee.
The objective of the bill from the very beginning was simply to make this information available to Floridians. So when there is an outbreak of this antibiotic-resistant threats, that Floridians have a single place that they can go to find where those outbreaks are occurring.
The single place, she proposes, would be a state health department website. Adkins' bill requires doctors, physician assistants, and nurses to use the site to record cases of treatment-resistant bacterial infections and where in the state they're found. The public would have access to that information. The measure also calls for an emergency response team to develop protocols for dealing with outbreaks, and it authorizes the health department to investigate outbreaks and report them to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Again, here's Adkins speaking to the Health Quality Subcommittee.
$20 billion is spent each year in excess direct health care costs as it relates to antibiotic-resistant threats. And it's also estimated that 22,000 to 23,000 Americans die each year.
That's why many nursing home and assisted living facility owners support the bill.
We have about 70,000 frail elders who are currently living in our state's nursing homes. And, you know, those individuals have very complex medical needs.
That's Florida Healthcare Association spokeswoman Kristen Knapp. The association represents about 600 facilities. She says members support the idea of transparency in treatment.
Certainly this will help improve upon the care of our elders as long as, you know, our staff, families, residents, and the general public, again, has the information they need to know about infectious disease, how that impacts a person's health.
In addition to the reporting requirements, the bill also requires a task force to recommend future research needed in the fight against treatment resistance. The bill passed its first committee unanimously. Meanwhile, the Senate version, sponsored by Jacksonville Republican Aaron Bean, has yet to be heard. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through U.S. Airways with direct flights from Tallahassee to Charlotte and Washington, D.C., and over 200 connections to destinations around the globe. Fares and information available online at usairways.com. Lisa Miller and Associates, offering strategies to solve legislative, regulatory, and business development challenges. Every challenge offers new opportunities for individually tailored client solutions. Online at lisamillerassociates.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 500,000 union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace, online at flaflcio.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.